Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and babies, Jesus! Help us!
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in California.
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope on this cowboy, guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that doctor, homie. Fuck that. Black D. Holler.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J-Cat Morris.
You are now listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
It is Wednesday, May 7, 2014. Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J.K. Morris. Back after a week off, you know, bunch of shit. Ah, man, I can't even scratch the surface about the, you know, amount of things that are going on in my life and different things going on, some good, some bad, whatever. But I have a guest on this week, and I believe I actually have him on hold right now. Let me put him on. This is the Chainsaw Joe Gacy.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing this fine evening?
Doing all right. Figure I'll have you on, talk about your career and, you know, everything that's been going on in wrestling and everything like that.
That sounds good. Sounds all right, fun.
Figure I'll start from the beginning, like always. You know, how'd you actually get into wrestling?
I mean, I guess it started just like anybody else. Always been a fan of it. It was, I mean, you know, me and my friends were fans. We decided to try doing it ourselves. And we did that for a couple of years. And then one thing led to another. We were always like big Combat Zone wrestling fans. And my brother ended up working at the same job with Combat Zone wrestler Lobo. So we ended up meeting him and, like, talking to him, and then he kind of opened the door for us to start training at the CZW Academy. And then, I mean, it pretty much took off from there.
So back then you were doing the backyard wrestling stuff, or?
Yeah, I guess if you can call it that.
You know, when you were doing that type of stuff and, you know, thinking about getting into wrestling and stuff, did you know, like, what the training entailed, or did you have any insight to that, or?
You know, I'll be completely honest. I was very, naive I guess before I started training, I guess initially thought that it wouldn't be too difficult. I knew nothing about it. I just thought, hey, maybe I'll train for a few months and then I'll start doing shows. And I was completely wrong. Ended up going to training and pretty much learning that it was not easy, and you had to do a lot and earn a lot of respect in order to even really do anything in the business. So I kind of, you know, learned that very quickly, but it was definitely a good lesson for me to learn.
Sure. Now going into it, you know, going into training and everything, like, did you have like a kind of a goal on like what you were going to do in the ring, the type of wrestler you wanted to be and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, when I started, I kind of had, like anybody else, I had kind of a vision for myself, which never really turns out the way anybody expects. When I first came in, I really wanted to be, wanted to be like Sick Nick Mondo. And then after learning more and more about wrestling, I decided, well, that's probably not a good idea. So then I kind of learned to start modeling myself after people guys I was a fan of. And then I kind of, I guess, pretty much took it from there. And I try to, like, I guess, mold around guys I like and then try to throw it all into one and try to make something unique, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Who are your influences, like the guys you're talking about that you liked that you were kind of aiming at?
I'm a big William Regal fan. But on top of, like, William Regal and, like, British wrestling, I'm also, like, a big fan of, like, Southern wrestling. I mean, obviously guys like Dusty Rhodes, Terry Funk. I'm also a big fan of, like, guys like Triple H. And of course I was always a fan of, like, ECW back in the day. I'm a big Mike right. Awesome fan. So, I don't know, I guess, like, a lot of guys like that, and, like, Taz, too, I try to take a little bit from everybody and try to just incorporate it into myself, and I guess it comes out the way it does.
Who were your trainers when you went to the CZW school?
When I started, mainly, actually, my first initial tryout was with Chris Hero, who at the time the CZW Academy was still kind of one school with the Chikara Academy. So we started there like that. And then it initially went into mainly John Dahmer, and then with a mix of, like, DJ Hyde. Eventually DJ Hyde kind of took over completely. I guess initially it was, like, initially it was DJ and Dahmer together.
Yeah, what was it like going into CZW initially? You know, I guess Zandig was still running things.
You know, Zandig, for anyone that knows him, is a very intimidating man. I remember the first time I met him, he met me and my group of backyarders, I guess you could say, and he just looks at us and goes, "Backyarders. I like backyarders, no fear." So initially off the bat, I'm like, well, he thinks I'm going to do something stupid. It was cool to, like, be there with Zandig. Obviously, like, I was a big fan of Zandig before I came in, so to actually be at the school and actually be in the ring with him sometimes and just be around him was a great experience. I still wish he was around, to be completely honest, but unfortunately he has other things, I guess, to do in his life.
Sure. Now, you know, going in as the guy who he saw and said, oh, backyarders and stuff, what did it take for you to mold yourself into something that he possibly saw a little more in or a little bit of a different outlook?
I guess just getting in the ring and, like, actually learning how to wrestle. I mean, like, besides, like, any hardcore stuff that I guess he initially wanted or eventually wants people to do when he was in charge anyway. Like, he didn't push people toward it, but obviously it's something he liked, so he used it for his company. But I guess, you know, getting in the ring and actually, like, learning things and learning how to wrestle, I guess kind of made that happen. At least that's what I would think anyway.
Right. When you started out and actually, you know, started wrestling for CZW, was your first run with Alex Colon with the DNC thing?
Yeah, that was pretty much how it started. Like, our debut match, it was like a three-way. It was me, Alex, and LJ Cruz. And then from there, for some reason, I guess, Zandig felt LJ was the fan favorite or whatever. So it was kind of like, it was kind of weird how, like, it seemed like the CZW Academy always graduated in groups of three. So, like, it always seemed like you would take one guy, use him this way, and then the other two would be a tag team. So that's kind of what happened with us.
Right. It seemed like, for the most part, you know, over time, CZW were together for, like, a long time. They more or less, you know, run their circuit of matches. Do you think that was kept for too long, or?
With us, I mean, maybe not. Like, there actually was a point pretty much in the first year, like, we obviously did, like, you know, a bunch of matches together, but when me and Alex were tagging, like, within the first year, we were already doing matches against guys like Beef Wellington, Greg Excellent. One time we tug against 2.0. We did stuff with Super Smash Brothers. So, like, for us, like, for that, you know, getting opportunities like that within our first year was, I mean, to us was a big deal. And at the time, we actually wrestled Blackout, too. So, like, it was cool. It was definitely good for us to learn that way, because keeping all the students together, like, is good at the beginning, but if we just keep wrestling each other, we're not going to learn anything. We're just going to keep doing the same match over and over again. So it was good that we had a chance to branch out.
You know, when you're tagging with another guy who, you know, you've come up with and all that stuff, is there a point where you guys kind of look at each other like, all right, like, what's next? Like, I'd like to go in this direction, or I'd like to go in that direction, because it's more or less circumstance that puts you together coming out of the school.
Yeah, like, me and Alex, like, started training together. We were friends, and it did get to a point where we started to try to take bookings other places together, and we learned that being a tag team was a lot more difficult than people, I guess, think about sometimes. Like, being in a tag team on the indie wrestling scene is pretty much like being married to somebody, where you guys have to agree on where you want to take things and where you want to go and agree on goals you want. And, yeah, it's, I mean, sometimes it's a pain depending on if you're dealing with the wrong person. I felt like me and Alex pretty much had our mindset on the same path. So, like, we kind of, it wasn't too hard for us to figure things out, and it was fairly easy, and we agreed on most things.
All right. At some point down the road, they did the Switchblade gimmick, and you ended up part of that. How did that all come about?
You know, it was kind of weird how that happened. Sammy Callahan had this idea to start, like, a group, and for some reason, I mean, me and him were, I guess, becoming friends at the time. We were, like, trained together for a little while. I think him and, like, Drake Younger collectively was trying to get John Moxley into CZW. So, like, at the same time, they were bringing Moxley in, and he wanted to, I guess, kind of break me out of, I guess, still being looked at as a CZW student. So he wanted to bring me into the group. And then, I mean, eventually it happened. And, I mean, that's pretty much how it happened. Sammy, I mean, it was really all Sammy's doing. It was really all his idea. And I kind of just went with it. I was, you know, looking forward to more opportunities. So,
And what was your feeling, you know, throughout that run? Because for the most part, I mean, Sammy and Mox has started to really, really pick up momentum and get over big. And, I mean, you still weren't being received, you know, greatly.
Yeah.
You know, how was that for you?
I mean, at the time, I was still naive. I rolled with it. Obviously, it was a spot. I'm not going to complain about doing anything, like having a spot at least. And at the time, I didn't really realize what my spot was. But looking back, obviously, I was the lackey. And at the time, I didn't really think about it that way. But looking back, it was. But, I mean, also got a chance to do a lot of cool things while doing it. I ended up doing my first main event, not only for CZW, but in the arena at the Tanglewood 3. But, I mean, I think a lot of it, not the whole them getting more of, like, you know, the breakout and me kind of standing, I guess, more to the back was, I mean, it was my fault. I was still new, and I was still learning, and I was still timid, and it took a little while for me to, like, start breaking that. So I think that's obviously them two guys being around, you know, for as long as they have, also being together and knowing each other for as long as they have, it was a little easier for them to kind of, you know, just do their thing, whether me, I'm just now picking up on them and trying to learn how to be myself. So, sure. I mean, it was a learning experience, but I definitely learned from it.
Yeah. You mentioned the Tangled Web match, you know, that had become one of the bigger CZW shows. Initially, it was kind of just another kind of gimmick match on a show, and it became like, you know, another one of the big CZW staple shows. You know, was that intimidating going into, like you said, the arena, the main event, the big gimmick match?
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually, the whole show, me, Sammy, DJ, and Greg sat in the back going over what we were doing, and the whole time I'm sitting here, like, just getting nervous, because it's like, being on the main event of a show, first of all, kind of sucks, because you have to sit there and wait and wait and wait until it's, you know, time for the main event. And a high-profile match like that, and, like, I kind of just felt like I really wanted to go out there and just do it rather than sit there and wait for it. So it was definitely nerve-wracking, and I didn't really even think about it. Like, when I walked out, I didn't even really look at the whole structure, like, until I even, like, walked out, like, to the ring. So as soon as I walked out, I was like, oh, my God, what did I get myself into? There was even a point where I kind of bitched out on barbed wire. And, I mean, it was whatever. It was the first time I've taken barbed wire. So, like, I took a big fall into it, and it sucked, not going to lie. And then the second time, I was like, oh, I really don't want to do this. So it was like a half-ass fall, and obviously it looked like I was pitching out. But, I mean, it was what it was, and if I could go back, I would definitely do that a lot differently. But, you know, it was definitely cool to be able to do it at least.
Right. Yeah, and it's got to be a lot different, too, going from, you know, a guy who's trying to get over and find his niche and everything else to being that guy kind of fed to the Philadelphia crowd, you know. you got to please this rabid crowd in the main event in a gimmick match and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. That crowd is definitely something else.
Oh, speaking of that, too, the Sloppy Joe chants. It seemed to have, you know, turned to the, now you're selling T-shirts, let's say, but, you know, what's your thoughts on the whole thing from start to, you know, current day?
You know, honestly, when it started, I wasn't really sure what they were referring to, if they just meant I was sloppy or if it was because I was, like, fat or maybe just a combination of the two. But, I mean, obviously, I think, like, having something like that, like, a lot of people might get, like, bent out of shape about it, and several people have asked me if that pisses me off. But honestly, for me to have something like that, I think was more of a gift than anything, because it gave me something to use and to do, and anytime I went out there and did anything, they had, you know, they had that chance. So it was definitely something that people paid attention to. And it still follows me to today, and now it's like really at the point where it seems like no matter what I do, they chant it. So it's like, is it still because they think I'm sloppy, or do they just do it because it's a fun thing to do? So that's kind of why I just decided to say screw it and embrace it, and decided to make shirts and sell them. People were actually on me for a while to make shirts, like years ago. They were like, you should make Sloppy Joe shirts, and I'm like, ah, but I think that'd be stupid, but I think that was a stupid one for not doing it sooner.
Sure. What was your favorite part of the whole Switchblade angle?
I think my favorite part was definitely doing more promo work, which was cool, especially doing stuff with, like, Sammy. Like, when we did, like we did a whole thing where we, like, kidnapped Danny Havoc. And I just think stuff like that's cool. You know, a lot of people are doing that type of stuff, especially on, like, an independent company. So stuff like that was cool. I got a chance to, you know, be a part of the bigger scheme of things in the company. And at the time, Zandig, like, was still running things, and he had eyes on me more so than he would have if I was just on, like, an undercard, I think. So, like, he became a supporter of me in his own company, which was good.
Right.
So, I mean, it was definitely a good experience, and I gained a lot from doing it. And, it was a lot of fun.
Now, going from that, you wind up in the Runaways. I don't know how much time was really in between. The most of what I remember was pretty much going from tag team to tag team. What was your thoughts on that?
Well, when I started with Alex Colon, I was all for it. When I went with Sammy, I was all for it. What happened was, when me and Sammy split up, I thought I was going to finally get a chance to do, like, a singles run. But apparently Sammy actually pitched to do me and Ryan as the Runaways. We were already in another company. We were doing, like, this tag team really only for one company. And then apparently DJ liked it, liked what he saw and what we did there. Because before we did it at CZW, we actually did this whole feud with the Osirian Portal at another company. So, like, DJ was into it. So when Sammy told him, you should do the Runaways here, he was like, oh, okay, I'm down with it. And then he told me and Ryan, hey, we're going to do the Runaways. And me and Ryan were actually both opposed to doing it initially at CZW, only because, like, he had, like, a thing going. I kind of wanted to do something else. So, like, we both wanted to do, like, a singles run, but, I mean, I guess it's difficult to argue with DJ on things like that. So he just, you know, said, well, this is what we're doing. So we just went with it.
Now I'll get back to the Runaways, too, but the transition from Zandig to DJ, you know, how did that work out for you? And, you know, how did it, you know, what did you think was going to happen to your spot? Did you see positives in it, or, you know, was it?
Well, when it happened, like, the night, I don't even remember what show that was, but the night that it happened, nobody knew besides DJ and Zandig what was happening. Like, all the guys at ringside had no idea. I didn't have any idea. And when they announced it, I said, what? Because me coming in, I was there. I like to think of myself as maybe one of the last John or Zandig guys, because he told us to come and train. So, like, after us, there wasn't really anybody else. Like, after us, everyone that came to the school was a DJ guy. So,
right. Kind
of upsetting for me to actually see him go. As far as, like, my spot or, you know, what I was worried about with the company, initially, I'll be honest, I was a little worried about it because I wasn't really sure what kind of direction DJ was going to go in. And I also found out he was going to, you know, be having other people book stuff, which I initially thought could be good. But then when I found out who it was, I wasn't really sure what kind of spot I was going to have.
Right.
But, I mean, initially I was a little worried about it. It ended up, in my opinion, actually being better than it probably could have been. DJ, I think, actually repaired a lot of relationships that Zandig may have destroyed in the past.
Sure.
So
yeah.
That did end up helping the company. My only complaint with CZW is when John was running things, he made it a unique company. Now, with DJ in charge, he's doing a lot of things that a lot of other, like, top indies are doing, and it's it's becoming, I hate to use the term, but it seems to be slowly becoming like just another indie, and it's unfortunate to see that because, like, John used to, you know, create homegrown guys and guys you can only see here at CZW, when now the show's filled up with guys you can see everywhere in the area, like, every weekend.
Yeah, I'd agree with that for sure. And, I mean, I started going back in 2001, and it had, you know, a very underground feel, but in the same token, if you got into it, I mean, you knew which guys you were following, and to the fans of the company, they were superstars. Maybe not so much directly outside of the company, but...
It's just like you had like your combat zone guys, like you had your group of combat zone guys, and like these were the guys you would see like going like overseas for CZW. Now it's like you got, you know, whoever's available to go overseas for CZW, and it's like, I don't know, it's kind of like not, it's like the whole like atmosphere of the company has changed, like it's not like what it was, and I actually go back and watch some of the old shows that, I mean, that I was a part of, and it's like, it just feels completely different.
Yeah, I think the old shows, you really did feel like, you know, as a fan that, you know, anything could happen, it just had a different feel to it rather than somewhat, okay, I expect this to happen, this to happen, this to happen, and it goes down that way, and then you go, oh, that's about right, you know. Just, you know, it's kind of predictable.
Yeah, unfortunately, sometimes.
But back to the Runaways, you know, you guys had a good run going. You started to really, you know, get a lot of chemistry between you two going. And, you know, like you said, you were working outside of CZW too. But obviously, you know, the big, big thing that got all the, you know, media and everything was the match with the Portal. And you had the most dangerous move in wrestling that went all crazy and viral. You know, what was your thoughts on that?
It was really weird because, like, obviously when we did it, we had no idea that it was going to become what it became. And we did it without telling DJ what was going on. So when we did it, apparently he was up in the balcony flipping out. Sometimes you kind of just got to do things, because if we asked him, he would have said no. So we just did it, and I mean, when it like blew up, like became viral, I remember I think I was like sitting at home, and somebody told me that it like played on like G4's Attack of the Show at the time. It was like on their internet video countdown thing. And, like, we were like, oh, that's crazy that we got on TV. And, like, it was kind of like I thought it'd be, like, a one-and-done thing. And then when we saw, like, the YouTube clips got up to, like, 3 million hits, and then, like, every other website it was on started blowing up, it started becoming, like, a crazy thing. And, like, we had no idea that was going to happen. But, I mean, we thought it was awesome. And I kind of wish we capitalized on it a little better than we did.
All right. Yeah,
but,
it got,
I mean,
the,
it happened.
Yeah.
And,
the Tosh.0 exposure and, you know, all sorts of different things. It pretty much made the rounds of all the clip shows that you can possibly, you know, be on.
Yeah.
What was your thoughts on, you know, because, I mean, you know, not to take, you know, credit for yourself that way, but the Portal had done the dance spot before. You know, it didn't take off like that, you know, anywhere that they did it, but something about it, you know, clicked completely when it was done in CZW. And to me, I think the biggest pop of that whole dance spot was you doing the head slide and the worm and stuff like that, because it was the guy in the ring that nobody thought was going to pull out what he pulled out. I mean, you know, what was your thoughts on that as far as, you know, kind of being the centerpiece of this thing that did go so big?
Well, it's funny, like, the story behind it is, like, I knew they did the dance thing, and they, you know, they did the whole hypnotize thing, so, you know, I know the Portal, so I went to them and was like, hey, you know, it'd be awesome, we have this match at Night of Infamy, I guess, I think it was, and I was like, let's do this big dance spot, it'd be awesome, and Ryan actually was totally against it, he didn't want to do it, And it took me and the portal to convince him that it was going to be awesome, because he thought that the crowd would care if we just gave a hard-fought match. And I said, I feel like we need to do something different. So we said we all agreed that we were going to do it, pretty much actually put the dance together as far as, like, what we were going to do. And it was actually their idea for me to go last, because they know I can do some things that people wouldn't expect. So I think they expected that, you know, they expected the pop, so to speak, would be for me at the end, because nobody was going to expect it. But it was definitely cool to be able to do something goofy, I guess, like that at a show like that, because obviously I don't get chances like that too often.
Sure. And then, you even had George Costanza call you Joe Runaway.
That's right. Actually, when we saw that on TV, like, we found out it was going to be on TV, and we were already excited. And then when it came on and found out that it was Jason Alexander doing the narrating, we flipped out. We were like, oh, my God, Jason Alexander's narrating this. This is amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. As a huge Seinfeld fan, I'm sure it was awesome
yeah,
for you
too.
As well. To jump off CCW for a minute, go to the other thing. You would have also wrestled over in Force One, and I think you were their world champion for a while. I went to one show, and they seemed like they were building somewhat of an underground type feel, and had a lot of indie talent, but did kind of a different mix with it, and had guys like yourself up top, and different guys were getting pushes that maybe not so much like in the CZW at the time or, you know, what have you. What was your thoughts on the company as a whole?
You know what, like, Force One, it's really a shame. Force One, honestly, at this point, was one of my favorite times in wrestling, like, when the company was running. It's funny, though, when Force One first started, I actually went and checked out their school before I even ever started training for CZW, and their original Tommy Cairo just immediately leaped me off, like, off the bat. So
right.
I decided against it, and, like, he's just a scumbag, Tommy Cairo. So, like, later, Sammy Callahan, he moved to New Jersey, and he somehow got hooked up working over at Force One, and
right.
it eventually turned into Tommy Cairo left because, like, pretty much all of his guys revolted against him, and, like, he left. So a guy named Johnny Calzone took over the company and appointed Sammy as the booker. So for that, like, whole year or, you know, time period where Force One built a name for itself as it did, it was actually Sammy was the one booking everything. So it was, like, it was a really awesome experience because Sammy, like, you know, wanted to give guys like, you know, me and, like, guys from CZW that weren't getting a lot of opportunities a chance to do something. And then also mix us with, like, you know, high top indie names, like when they bring in Chris Hero and stuff like that. And, it was a lot of fun. And, like, me and a lot of the guys, like, still talk about, like, you know, oh, we wish Force One was still around. And it's unfortunate.
Sure.
There was some beef between Sammy and Calzone, which led to Sammy leaving. And, I mean, I hate to say it, but I think Sammy leaving ultimately kind of killed the company. So it's a shame, but,
yeah.
I mean, it happened, and, you know, it was a good time, but I guess, you know, nothing good lasts forever.
Yeah. Initially, when I saw it, it reminded me a lot of, initially it was Big Buff Promotions, and then it turned into Phoenix Championship Wrestling. It was Donnie B ran a promotion over here by where I live, and it was actually what got me into CZW, because I was just attending a local show, whatever. I had no idea, like, there was a thing like indie wrestling. It was just whatever local shows. Well, you know, booked on the card was the back seats. They had Rick Blade. They had, they were booking up top. They were booking like Candido, but they were dead. Christopher Daniels was there when he had blonde hair still. And it was just like, when you think about it now, it was almost a super card, but it was just, you know, just local, nothing show, and you saw some of what these guys can do, and, you know, they turned me on to, hey, you like this, go to CZW. So it went from there, but it had that type of feel where it was, you know, a lot of talent put on the shows that a lot of people might not have known of, you know, previously.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, on Sammy's shoot, he actually touched on kind of what you're saying and said that, you know, there was parts of the company that fell apart, and he thought that Calzone had pretty much started going into business for himself and booking himself up top more so than guys like yourself. And then, you know, Lauderdale had brought up something about some instance that happened between you and Calzone and something about stealing a ring and you getting arrested and what actually happened?
Well, okay. So pretty much in a nutshell, I decided to attempt to run my own company, which lasted like four shows. And our second show ever, I was using the ring. Technically it was Johnny Calzone's ring, that, you know, they used for the Force One shows. He, you know, gave me permission to use the ring, didn't charge me. He said, as long as you, you know, pay for the truck, you can use it. And I was like, all right. Well, sure. Little did I know, Force One was, you know, pretty much close to closing at this point. I think they had, like, one more show, and then they were pretty much done or whatever. And the building is called Spontaneous Sports, and it's in Egg Harbor, New Jersey. The building got shut down, and I had no idea. Like, I heard the building was getting shut down, but I didn't know the building was already shut down. So pretty much, like, we used to go there twice a week and train because the ring was always set up there. So we would be there twice a week anyway, and nobody would say a word to us. So we're like, okay, you know, no big deal going into this building. The day of my show, we go to pick up this ring. Little did we know that the building was shut down, and Calzone and the owner of the building had some beef over rent money. And nobody told me a thing about that. Nobody said anything. Calzone just said, you know, you can go use the ring. So we go pick it up. It's me and two other guys. We're loading it. We pretty much have it mostly loaded, and then the cops show up. And I'm like, you know, whatever, they're probably just seeing what's going on. And, you know, they told us that the building shut down, we shouldn't be here. I explained to him, you know, I'm so-and-so, we're doing this and that, explained the situation. And he said, okay, well, you know, just don't load anything else and just leave. You're not supposed to be here. So at first I was, like, upset because now I don't have a ring for the show that I have that day. Eventually we scrambled around and got one. But later down the line, we ended up getting, me and the two other guys got these summonses or whatever you want to call them, like a notice in the mail saying that we were getting charged with criminal mischief and burglary. Apparently what happened was the owner of the building, you know, found out we were there because the ring was half gone. And I guess what he was doing was holding out on the ring for Calzone to pay him what he owed him or right. something. So he, you know, pressed charges on us for breaking into the building pretty much. So we had to go to court, and we actually got brought up on, like, indictable charges, which was close to actually serving jail time. And my one friend, he has, like, a legit, like, government job. So, like, he was out of work with no pay for, like, 2 months, and he has, like, a family and a house. So he's like, well, this is ridiculous. So he kind of took it upon himself to contact the building owner and was like, you know, what's going on? What can we do to work this out? And pretty much what was agreed upon was we pay him what Calzone owed him if he dropped everything. So we ended up paying all the funds we had for my company. So all the money we had, we paid him. So pretty much left no funds for me to run a show anymore.
Wow.
So we paid him. He dropped all the charges. Everything got dropped, luckily, anyway. That's, I guess, pretty much a story in a nutshell. There was a lot of beef or heat, whatever you want to call it, between me and my friend against Calzone because of the situation. Recently, actually, funny story, after the Sammy shoot came out, Calzone saw it. He got infuriated, and he actually contacted me. And, I mean, me and him kind of pretty much buried everything. So, I mean, we're on talking terms again. But, I don't know, that's pretty much the whole story. I just think there was, I'm not sure who, but there was something shady going on there. Somebody lied about something, and I'm still not clear on whose fault it was, but something weird happened.
I mean, was the building locked there? I mean, no notices or anything?
It wasn't the first time that we snuck into the building. Like, when we went there for training, sometimes the doors were locked. Like, the way this building was set up, it was like a giant tent, pretty much, that had, like, zippers on the sides. So there was times where we've crawled through holes that were just there, and it was whatever. Nobody batted an eye about it. So that's what we did to get this ring out. We went inside, opened the door, and took the ring out. So I guess, you know, that's probably one of the main things that looked bad was the fact that we actually did kind of break in. But,
right. Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes more sense. Because I'm saying, if they left the door open, no notice, no nothing, and then charge you for breaking in, it doesn't really, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But, that's quite a story, because, yeah, it's a lot to have to go through, you know, get a ring and run a show, so that's a shame.
Yeah. Well, that's a story to share now, I guess.
So, you know, back to, you know, you did the thing with the Runaways, and the two of you were going to split up, and to me it seemed rushed. I don't know, you know, what was actually going on, but it was like just quick fast forward into a non-tournament match, a Tournament of Death, and
yeah.
I mean, yeah, how did that come about, or, you know, go in that direction?
That was actually a whole other thing that happened too. Okay. Pretty much, in a nutshell, me and Ryan Slater around this time, I wouldn't say we had problems with each other, but there was like a weirdness there, and like it's this unspoken weirdness that me and him still have never confronted. But something was weird. Like I didn't like the way he talked to me. Like, he treated me like I was an idiot and had no idea what I was talking about, when in reality, I, you know, was traveling around a little more before he was doing anything. So that kind of pissed me off. And the way he carried himself in the locker room, a lot of people noticed and got him heat with a lot of people. So he had like an attitude about him that people didn't like. And unfortunately for me, it was guilty by association. So people started, you know, giving us heat, or we had heat from people in the locker room. And pretty much the thing that set everything off was me and him came up with this idea that we pitched to DJ. Now, the problem was he wrote an email to DJ, and it was the way it was worded was pretty much, it came off like really cocky and arrogant. And when DJ got it, he, you know, told a few people, and I ended up getting a message from Drake Younger, pretty much explaining to me what's going on and telling me that everyone kind of knows that I'm respectable, but they don't like how Ryan's acting, and it's a problem. So I had a talk with DJ, pretty much telling him, like, look, I don't want to be involved in any of this stupid drama. I told him, like, hey, can you just split me and Ryan up, because I just don't want to deal with it. So he agreed, and that's pretty much where it went from there was, you know, we did the split. Because what happened was, there was a show, me and Ryan were actually supposed to win the tag team titles at Aerial Assault in this, like, four-way tag match, I think. It was like a random show at this, like, gym in, like, Philly somewhere. Walked in, and like, on the card, like, we were supposed to be winning the tag titles. Well, apparently somebody, I'm not really sure who, went to DJ and said no. So it got changed because, you know, they didn't want either me and Ryan or Ryan to have the tag belts. So it got changed, and I guess from there was kind of where we figured that me and him were going to split up. So, you know, that happened. We split, and then BJ did the Tournament of Death match, me versus him, and I actually had five people come up to me and ask me to, like, you know, kill him, like, legit. And I wasn't planning on doing anything stupid to him until he actually did something that I asked him not to do in the match, and he pissed me off, so I kind of went off on him a little bit. And ever since then, there was kind of a weirdness between us, and I never wanted him to get, like, fired from the company. I just didn't want to tag with him anymore, and DJ ended up getting rid of him, which I kind of didn't agree with, but it happened, and he's kind of in his own place in life now, and I'm where I am, so I don't know. We still talk, but it's weird.
All right. Now, going off of that, I'm not sure if it was directly. I lose some of the in-betweens. you had a long feud with Matt Tremont.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you had a bunch of things going on with him. And then amongst that, he had the big scare, the Hep C scare, where he thought it was that. And, you know, it turned out it wasn't.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you were locked in a feud with, you know, a blood feud with this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, how did you receive that? Like, how did you take that?
Well, when Matt found out that, like, you know, when it happened, I guess, he misunderstood exactly off the bat, because when it happened, I guess he thought that he had it.
Right.
And he actually, I saw him, and he pulled me aside and told me. And, you know, I immediately just felt bad for him, because, like, wrestling's, you know, all he has and all he does, and it's like, if that's what's going on, like, he's not going to be able to do it anymore, really. So, like, immediately I felt bad for him, and then we had a couple talks with DJ to figure it out. And then I forget exactly how it came about, but then it was talked about that it could have been a false positive because of his stomach. He has, like, a stomach and liver health issue, which apparently made the hormones read higher, which gave, like, a false positive or whatever. So he ended up going to, like, a personal doctor, like a family doctor, and got that all checked out, and the doctor confirmed that it was a false positive and he didn't have anything. So we at the time, we kind of just put everything on hold, I guess, because we were kind of just waiting on that.
Right.
I wasn't worried for me because, like, you know, at the time, me and him didn't really do much yet. Like, we haven't, you know, shared blood or anything like that before that. So I wasn't, like, worried about it. And then, you know, when he got cleared, everything was cool. I was happy. And apparently, like, I mean, like, recently, there's still people saying that he has it. And I would just like to say and clear, you know, any air that there is, that he is definitely 100% clean and does not have anything, because I know Matt, and Matt even told me, like, there's no way he would continue to do this if he had anything. Like, he would not put anyone else at risk, like, for something like that.
Yeah, of course. That didn't send any kind of scare in your direction or anything, you know, hearing that. And I think actually Kobayashi had, like, the same, like, thing going on over in Japan at the same time.
Well, I think the reason I wasn't so scared is because we all got tested and my test came back fine. So I knew I didn't have anything. So I was like, okay, you know, whatever. I mean, there's always the scare of, you know, if one person has it, you know, who else could have it? I wasn't so afraid for myself as I was just, you know, worried for Matt, and I don't, you know, at the time I didn't know if maybe somebody else might have had something. So I was just more worried about him, you know, like, dealing with that. So, I mean, when he found out he didn't have it, I was happy. But as far as me, you know, I wasn't really worried. I was cleared, so it wasn't really a problem for me.
What's your thoughts on, you know, the state of deathmatch wrestling as a whole?
Mm-hmm. What do I think about it?
Yeah.
Well, personally, there is a place in time for a death match. Personally, I don't think it belongs on every show. But CZW, unfortunately, created a catch-22 for itself when it built a fan base on death matches. So it kind of has to make, you know, those deathmatch fans happy to have one on at least every show or as much as possible. When at the same time, like, DJ's trying to take the company in a new direction with, like, weaning it out a little bit. So it's difficult. But, like, the fact, like, my opinion is a deathmatch has a place if it's a feud or if it's some kind of blow-off match to something. Like me and Matt example, like we did the House of Horrors match. Before that match, I was totally against doing any more death matches. I said I'm not doing any more death matches. But then we decided that we were going to have a blow off, and I was like, well, all right, I'll do that. In my mind, that match was probably the last death match that I'm going to participate in. You know, it has a place for certain people if it's done correctly, but I just don't really think that's for me. I mean, I don't mind doing some, like, hardcore stuff, but just anything that can scar me up kind of freaks me out a little bit.
Right.
So, I mean, I told DJ that I didn't really want to do anymore, and, I mean, he doesn't believe me, but I'll just wait until he comes and asks me to do another one, and then I'll say no.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've really started to feel a certain kind of way about it where, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of the big deathmatch stars are gone, you know, some have retired,
yeah.
Some have, you know, moved on. We've lost a few, you know, permanently.
Yeah.
A lot of different things, and it's hard to, you know, get people to do that. But in the same token, a lot of what I'm seeing now, and I could see the way that the fans are reacting and everything, and I'm a fan of deathmatch wrestling, but I feel that, you know, as you said, that Catch-22 of the fans being a little spoiled with it, one, but also I see a big problem now where, and I think it was kind of created through, you know, the wrestlers sometimes, you know, they'll hit themselves in the head with the chair or they'll, you know, hit themselves with the light tube or bite the light tube or whatever.
Yeah.
It's seems to have kind of turned the corner to the point where the fans are under the assumption that the wrestlers should like getting hurt.
Yeah.
Like, even, you know, I went the Best of the Best. They had the match with Shane Strickland and Devin Moore.
Yeah.
Shane avoided the barbed wire for the most part, the entire crowd turned on him. You pussy,
yep.
You take the barbed wire. It's like, you know, why is the wrestler supposed to want to go into the plunder? You know, that's not...
Absolutely.
That's not a victory jumping into the shit that everyone's supposed to know hurts. I just...
Yeah.
I feel like that's, you know?
It's definitely a problem because, like, obviously those fans that want to see the deathmatch stuff, they really don't care who is a good guy, who's a bad guy. They just want to see somebody get thrown into plunder and bleed, and they don't care about anything else. So regardless of what's going on, they're not thinking of any kind of match psychology. They just see this guy avoiding this barbed wire and they go, oh, poo. And yeah, I mean, exactly what you said. It's definitely, you know, that's how I do view it. And I am a fan of death matches myself. Like I said, I originally wanted to be like Thick Nick Mondo. It's my opinion of it now is, like, the only real unfortunate thing about it is I feel like it's almost getting to the point where it's impossible to, like, take it to another level, because it's like now almost everything's been done, and it's like until somebody short of getting their head cut off in the middle of that ring, there's, like, almost nowhere else to take a death match. Like, and I feel like it's starting to get dulled down a little bit because the fans have seen, like, everything. And it's a death match now seems to just becoming another match that's on the show rather than, like, the match that everyone wants to see.
Yeah, and depending on where it's being hosted will depend on, the moral value of what they're willing to do. Like, you know, down south they were stabbing each other with box cutters and that was considered a spot because it's shock value.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, like I said, I don't think it's going in a good direction. because the fans aren't, they don't respect it enough to think that, hey, you know, God, that's dangerous. I hope that, you know, you would think the guy doesn't want to go into that, but he's a pussy if he doesn't. So it's very strange at this point. It's like people begging for a finishing move. Like, you're a pussy. You didn't take that power bomb. Like, oh, why would you want? I don't know.
it takes
the whole aura.
I agree.
You know, moving forward, you've had a lot of matches lately. Cage of Death was definitely one of them where you fit into the match in a way where if you looked at the lineup, you kind of looked like the odd man out. You know, you had A.R. Fox, you had Tony Nese, you had all these other guys in the match, and then you were able to keep pace with these guys and really do some stuff that stood out and, you know, showed that you can kind of hang with all these guys and do part of their style too.
Mm-hmm.
What took you in that direction?
Well, I mean, honestly, like, I've always been able to do that stuff, and I've always wanted to do that stuff, but it's a rare occasion that I get a chance to do it because the way that I'm used, and I really hate to put it that way, I guess, but even DJ will be the first to admit it, that I'm one of the most misbooked guys that there is, and it's like, personally, they're the kind of matches that I want to do. I want to wrestle guys like A.R. Fox and Strickland and stuff and be able to do that stuff like an athletic, bigger guy, I guess.
Right.
So, I mean, I feel like I finally convinced him that I can do that stuff, and I think I showed him. So I'm hoping more of that's coming because that's honestly the type of wrestling that, like, I really want to be a part of. I mean, you know, more matches like that is kind of what I'm looking forward to. And it's like, I also do want to, you know, have matches against guys like Masada again, because I need to make up for our last match. And, you know, just like, I like to have like a mix of a lot of different things. But right now I'm kind of feeling like I really want to go that route, I guess. Because it's like people don't expect it. And if they see me do some stuff like that, they're going to remember it.
All right. Yeah, I personally think that that's where you shine the most. Just seeing some of the things you're able to do, you know, putting you in there with a smaller guy, you can still work as the power guy, you know, the bigger guy, as well as pulling some stuff out that's going to blow, you know, a lot of people's minds because, you know, they don't expect that out of you as much. And even if they do, it's still really impressive. where a lot of times, you know, you put a – you know, you and Tremont, I mean, kind of limits you to brawling. You're not going to be the big guy who's throwing him all over the place. And then, you know, pulling out a high-flying move or something like that is still going to be out of place, you know?
Yeah.
So, like you said, you're looking forward to those type of matches and everything else. But what, you know, what are some dream matches that you would actually like?
Like something plausible or just something I want to do?
something possible, even if it's a tall order.
I mean, I would definitely like another match with Masada, something not involving a girl running into it. Right now, I would actually love to do a match with Joker. I've only done like single or tag matches, like one tag match with him. And I would love to do something with him, just me versus him. I mean, other than that, there's a list of guys I would love to, you know, work with, like guys like Chris Hero, of course. A lot of name indie guys like that. Like, I would like to have an opportunity to get in the ring with. Any of them. I'm trying to think of one specifically that's like drawing a blank for some reason. I've recently done stuff, I know we've done stuff like before in the past when he was starting out, but I recently had a couple matches with Adam Cole, at a company in New York, which, was something I've always wanted to do because we've wrestled before, but like, obviously he's where he is now and I feel like I'm a lot better than I was. So like, I always wanted to have another match against each other cause we both excelled like, you know, so much from when we were younger. You know what? Actually, yes. I would like to wrestle Kevin Steen. That is a match I would love to do.
Okay. What are some of the goals that you have? Is there places you want to work or get to? I know, you know, most people say WWE, which is completely understandable, and some people opt more in Japan or, you know, where are you?
I mean, I at this point just want to excel up anywhere I can go. I mean, my ultimate goal obviously is like something like WWE where, you know, I would be on TV and make money and this and that. So that's the ultimate goal for me. But I mean, at this point I just want to get to the next level, I guess, so to speak, which is really what I'm trying to work on. I'm trying to get in shape. I feel like my body holds me back a lot. I mean, I would love to get into like a Ring of Honor or like even a TNA I would love to go to Japan. I would love to go anywhere overseas, which is what I'm actually waiting for because I was told to get my passport 3 years ago and haven't needed it yet. So I mean, like I'm waiting. You know, I don't want to say I'm waiting for the opportunity, but I'm trying to make an opportunity, I guess. I'm trying to get out there more. But yeah, I mean that's pretty much my goal. My goal this year is to try to get to something I haven't gotten to yet, I guess would be the best way. Like whether it be a trip to Germany, a trip to Japan, or even like a match for like Ring of Honor or anything, a dark match anywhere, or even a tryout anywhere. Like I really just want to try to do something this year. But I mean, yeah, like my ultimate goal would be to get to WWE, and I know to get there I'm going to have to work on my body, so that's what I'm trying to do now.
Sure. And you said, you know, working on that and stuff, and you've clearly lost a bunch of weight. What are you doing right now to get yourself down?
I mean, honestly, I work out like every day. I go to the gym pretty much every day. A lot of it's diet. Like I'm eating a lot better than I used to. Like I used to eat fast food every day. Now I'm just like, I'm cooking meals, I'm making a lot of chicken, I eat Chipotle, which a lot of people say Chipotle, like, oh, that's junk food, when if you get the right thing at Chipotle, it's actually good for you. So I eat that a lot, and on top of that, I feel like I'm at the point where I sped my metabolism up to where it's like, it's just burning fat, like, all the time, so... Like, I'm just eating small meals all day, and I'm working out, like, as much as I can. Like, I'm at the gym, like, 6 days a week. So, I mean, that's really all I'm doing. And on top of that, I go to training, like, at least twice a week. I try to go more, but, yeah, so, I mean, that's really what I'm doing. And, I mean, a lot of people are noticing, so I'm hoping, you know, summertime's going to hit. I'm only going to lose more when it's hot out. So, I'm hoping by the end of the summer I'll be looking good.
Yeah. If you had to, you know, give somebody, you know, like a tape, you know, maybe three of your favorite matches or something as more or less like a, I guess, like an audition or, you know, to give someone a sample of what you're capable of doing, what would you give them?
Right now, I would definitely say I did a three-way in Binghamton, New York, 2 years ago. It was me versus Brody Lee versus Fit Finley. That right now is one of my favorite matches I've ever done. So I would definitely show that to someone. I would say also for the same company I was just talking about, I wrestled Adam Cole. I would show him that match. And then I would say probably the last CZW anniversary show I wrestled Shane Strickland. I was actually really happy with that. I would probably use that one as well because that shows more kind of the things I can do that people wouldn't expect.
Cool. I think that's about all I got. Anything you want to, you know, put out there, promote, anything?
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Joe Gacy. That's a pretty simple Twitter handle. Other than that, I mean, you know, I'll be at CZW this weekend, or look for me at any other local shows or find me on social media. Other than that, I think that is all I have to plug.
All right, cool. Yeah, thanks for coming on, man. I'd love to have you back in the future. You know, just keep killing it, doing what you're doing, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot
man,
more to talk about.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Lots of fun.
All right, awesome, man. So have a good night. Like I said, thanks for coming on.
All right, man. Thanks again. I'll talk to you soon.
No problem.
Yeah.
So there you go. That was Chainsaw Joe Gacy. Good dude. Like I said, I think he's making enormous strides to be something, you know, really big on the indies. I think he's one of the, as he said, one of the last John Zandig guys. But beyond that, one of the guys who CZW can easily use as a CZW guy. Not a lot of guys you can call that, you know. There's guys like AR Fox, and, you know, for as much talent as he has and everything he has to offer, I mean, he's an Evolved champion, or he was an Evolved champion. I don't know. I'm not really completely up to date on current or non-current champions. I mean, he's the shit on the top of a lot of people's cards. So when it comes down to it, you know, you can't strictly call him as much of a CZW guy as you'd like to, because he is blowing up everywhere, and it's nothing against him. It's just a matter of, you know, you can't really brand your company on that guy. You know, I mean, same goes for a lot of these guys. It becomes, you know, you're blowing up on, you know, PWG, and you're blowing up in CZW and Ring of Honor or Dragon Gate or what have you. So it's hard to, you know, find a guy that you can actually brand your company of and say, this is kind of what we're all about. And, you know, and a guy like Joe Gacy has done a bunch of the hardcore stuff, as well as, like I said, you know, to have a guy that's well-versed enough to do the power stuff, as well as, you know, throwing in some of that technical stuff and a little bit of lucha on a big guy, it's pretty big variety, and it's a good thing to be able to stake, you know, this is, you know, our guy type thing. So anyway, I'm going to take a break. I'm on a Scarface song or something. I didn't load any new songs, so anything I'm playing is going to be old, like I played it before. So anyway, I'm going to play this, and then I'll be back. I'll go to all this stuff.
In world news today, officials decree that rapper Brad Jordan, alias Scarface, must be stopped. After being monitored by Secret Service agents for 2 years, evidence leads tobacco and firearms officials to believe that his literally dope lyrics promote drug usage and distribution, degrade women, influence gambling, promote and teach violence, and more importantly, it's influencing our minors and destroying our communities. Officials say he's the lord of underground rap.
Once again,
him and his music must be stopped.
We got this whole motherfucker on the mission. Now the whole entire world has gotta try to come up with a quick decision. They claim we threat to society, and now they're calling on the government to try to make somebody quiet for the bullshit they done to me. Gangsta Nip Spice warned that Tupac never gave a gun to me. So gangsta rap ain't done shit for that. I've even seen white folks from River Oaks don't get to get. So why you trying to kick them dust up? America's always been known for blaming us niggas, but they fucked up. And we were always considered evil. Now they're trying to bust our only code of communicating with our people. Let's peep the game from a different angle. Matt Dillon pulled his pistol every time him when someone tangled. So why you criticize me for the shit that you see on your TV? That freaks worse than PG. Just bring your ass to where they got me, so you can feel the hand of the dead body.
Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong.
So now they trying separation and sending black folks in white coats to infiltrate our congregation, tapping into our conversation, taking the message that they get, bring forth wrong premeditation. So David's got a silver mask while listening to Brad. David gets pissed and killed his dad. David Duke's got a shotgun. So why you get upset? Cause I got one. A tisket, a tasket. A nigga got his ass kicked, shot in the face by a cop closed casket. An open and shut situation. Cop gets got, they wanna blame it on my occupation. If you don't dig me, then nigga, you can sue me. Cause the shit that I be saying ain't worse than a Western movie. Don't blame me, blame your man, got it. so you can feel the hand of the dead body.
Nigga, don't believe that phone, that nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long.
To free your mind before I free my nine and stop fucking with these void of pop. I feel my hot rocks. Bang bang, boom boom, ping ping. I'm the black white boys got a magazine and don't know how to act. I attack and make you vomit. Down with Khaled, I'm through Muhammad. Dewey got a brother, I'm McNair. I'm the illest. Wanna kill this house nigga Don Cornelius. Can you feel this? You punk niggas make me sick. Sucking on the devil's dick, scared of revolution. Need to start douching. Houston is the place. I caught a case. The motherfuckers tried to put a scar on my face. But I bust two times to the guts. Through the Reverend Calvin butt. Got a pair of nuts. I started this gangsta shit in 86. Now you're dissing me for publicity. Isn't he a hoe to the third degree? Who me? I'm a G that like to scrap a lot. Down with rap a lot. And I can't stop, won't stop. So fuck Bill and Hillary. Ice Cube, it ain't no killing me. Ice Cube, Scarface, dropping it on sellout ass niggas. Doing it like
nigga don't believe that song, that nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long. Nigga don't believe that song, that nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long.
All right, I'm back. I wanted to start out the show with it, but I forgot about it. But definitely want to give a congratulations to Greg Excellent. He had a baby. Him and his wife had a baby, obviously. So, yeah, congratulations to that dude. I think he's going to make a fantastic father. I mean, he's just, you know, you could tell that dude's just a ton of fun. And, you know, he's just going to be fucking great dad. So congrats to them. He's an awesome dude. On this, like I said, I missed last week, so I got to try to backtrack the best I can. My mind's all over the place. For some reason, I'm just way, way out of sorts tonight. Just even going into before I started the show, I'm like, oh, fuck, man, my brain's doing, like, fucking cartwheels and shit. I don't know if I could do a fucking cartwheel, but my brain sure as shit can. So anyway, I did the race. It was the ABF Mud Run, or something along those lines. It was the first of the mud races that I was doing this year. This fucking thing sucked. I came in, I think, 32nd I came in out of 400, I think. Was it 400? What is it? I mean, I just completely fucking botched that number. Let me see if I could, I don't even think it was 400. I think it was like 240 or, yeah, it was like 240. So I came in like 32, I think, out of 240. So, still, better than 200 plus other people, which is, you know, to me, very, very good. Actually, when I left, because I did a 9:30 wave. There was like an 8:30 wave, which was supposed to be the elite competitive people who's, you know, really trying to break records or whatever they were trying to do with themselves at 8:30. And then, you know, there was everybody else. So, you know, the second earliest wave. And when I left, I was actually ninth overall. And, ninth overall. And I think like third in my age group or some crazy shit. And I was like, holy fuck, you know, because, you know, just seeing ninth overall out of really. And I think they were already up to like 200 people, which I don't know how that works out, because unless there was another, you know, 25 people that were all faster than me, it seems insane. But anyway, I was just, you know, thrilled that I was ranking that high, you know. And then the whole day, you know, went by, and I checked the internet for like the final count or whatever, and that's about where I came in. I'll be a little more accurate. I'll look it up tonight, and then the next show I'll hit that up or whatever. But yeah, I was really happy with that as far as, you know, my time or whatever the case is. It was supposed to be like 4 to 6 miles. I don't know where it fell, like within that 4 to 6 miles. There was no like mile markers or halfway point marked and what that was or anything. And it just felt like an eternity because it just fucking sucked. I've grown somewhat accustomed to what these mud runs are like. You have your different mud obstacles, you know, mud pits and shit to jump into and have to crawl out of and shit to climb and stuff to crawl under and a lot of running, right? Well, this fucking thing was not a lot of running. The obstacles, for the most part, weren't that serious until you hit the, they had, like, it was called, like, Jarheads Playground or something, and that was, they hit you with, like, 8 obstacles in a row, like, back-to-back type thing, and that was a little, you know, up there. But they started you off running, and, you ran a little bit, and then, like, the first obstacle was, and I do this shit by myself, so if there's a team, like, obstacle, I gotta, you know, grab whoever's around and, you know, team up with them, which is, you know, fine, whatever. The first obstacle was, this fucking thing must have weighed 400 pounds, like, no exaggeration. They had these big, thick-ass telephone poles that are long as shit, and had to weigh 400 pounds. Me and, like, 4 other people, or some shit like this, and, like, 2 of them were chicks. 2 of them were chicks, 2 dudes, and me, had to carry this thing, and you had to carry it. It must have been, like, I want to say, like, 100 yards or something like that, because you had to go, like, way down with it, then you had to make a turn, go through, like, the water with the shit, which we ended up, like, flipping it end over end onto the other side, and then picking it up again and carrying it back and then carrying it back all the way back. This fucking thing must have weighed at least 400 pounds, and I could easily say that because, you know, where I work, you know, I handle, you know, I work cats, and I handle, like, cat litter and stuff all the time. So, like, I'll throw, the 25-pound bags, I'll throw 4 of those on my shoulder or even 5 of those on my shoulder and carry that shit around. So if I could easily throw that 100 pounds or a little over 100 pounds on my shoulder on a regular basis without even thinking about it, like, I don't feel like, oh, fuck, here we go. Like, it's normal to me. Like, I throw that shit up and I have a bunch of other people, oh, you're going to hurt yourself. And, dude, I've been doing this shit for 13 years. That's like a normal weight to throw on my shoulder. It's just kind of what I'm used to. You know, two of the bags of dog food that are 50 pounds each, no problem. Like, you know, I could do 3 of them, you know, it's not a huge deal, you know, or sense of bragging or anything like that to me. That's not where I'm going with this. But what I'm saying is, like, I regularly do that. So if I'm holding part of this big motherfucking thing with everybody else and the shit feels heavy as fuck on my shoulder, I know we're talking a whole lot of fucking weight because it wouldn't feel so awkward and ridiculously heavy if it wasn't, you know, a good step up from what I'm used to, and it was. So that, I thought that was an asinine fucking obstacle because you don't know who the fuck is carrying these things, and I guess that was stupid. So did that, and was like, all right, well, then here we go with that shit. Had a couple, like, balance beam type shits where it was like a log, another, like, telephone pole type thing, and it wasn't secured, so it was kind of rolling back and forth. I was able to cross both of those, no problem. I'm like, okay, you know, they really, you know, they stepping up with some of these obstacles. That was, you know, a little tough. Not everyone was getting across them. And then that fucking weight you got to carry around and shit to begin with. And I'm like, all right, you know, let's see what this shit's got. Get a little further up a trail. And this thing kind of bordered on a creek. And you just got to a certain point. They're like, yeah, you're getting the fucking creek. And the water was anywhere from waist high to chest high.
and it was motherfucking cold. I mean, there's no other way to put it, but this shit was cold. This, they told you right off the start. Now, they downplayed the hell out of the water because they, hypothermia is a risk today, which I can tell you right now, I know what hypothermia feels like now because I definitely had a mild case of that shit. I didn't stop shivering all the way home after this thing. So anyway, you go through there, and I'm saying, like, at least 200 yards in the water and just wading through. I mean, there's no... This wasn't, you know, man-made obstacles. This is you're in the goddamn creek, and it's April, and shit ain't warm out. And the water's clearly not warmed up because it's only April, and this is just a, you know, bullshit creek. So I'm, you know, wading through this. You go, like, 200 yards probably. I'm telling you, if this thing was 4 to 6 miles, I must have traveled fucking 2.5 miles in that motherfucking creek combined. So you get out of there, you come crawling out of there like, oh, fuck, that was cold. Your whole body, like, fucking hurts from it. And you just like, oh, shit, that sucked. And you come out, they're like, oh, okay, there's a hurdle thing here. And there's another hurdle thing there. So you got to clear those. So, boom, clear the hurdle, you know, run 50 feet, clear the other hurdle. Then there's a dude standing on the side of the creek, back in the water, he tells you. I'm like, oh, this ain't this and shit. So you get back in the fucking water, and now you travel like another 200 feet or so. And I mean, they just kept going on these long-ass stretches where they just took you to get back in the water. And it felt like there was no end to it. And you get out, climb that wall, back in the creek. I mean, by like the third or fourth time of that, I looked at the dude and was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. And he's like, nah, man. I'm like, well, shit. So you get back in there, and there was a while like where I was traveling, and I'm in the fucking creek, and I'm just thinking to myself, like, I don't even know if I'm going the right way. There's no quote-unquote runners around me. There's no quote-unquote staff members around. It's just me in the fucking water with, like, mushy ass. The bottom of the shit's like, you know, it's a creek for real. This isn't, nobody built this shit. There's just, like, you know, mushy leaves and mud on the bottom of the creek, and you don't know if you're going to step on a fucking snapping turtle or a snake or some dumb shit. So you're just, like, going through this shit and just pulling yourself through. You don't see nobody around. And I'm thinking to myself, like, man, I might have took a wrong turn in this fucking creek. And because it's winding around a little bit now, and I'm like, damn, like, there wasn't enough runners, or I hate calling it runners because there was no running for the most part. And there wasn't enough to, like, really have cleared a path, so you would hit, like, a part where you got to, like, push a branch out of the way to keep going in the creek. And then eventually, you know, just not knowing whether I was on the right path or not, eventually you just come up to, like, a bank where, like, there's a dude standing there like, all right, man, just keep pace, let's go, man. It's like, oh, fuck you. I was telling every one of the people who worked there, like, fuck you, like, you gotta be kidding me, get the fuck out of here. Like, I'm telling you, man, wading through this cold ass creek, I'm just thinking to myself, like, this fucking sucks. I have actual fun in a lot of these mud races, even Tough Mudder. Tough Mudder was a blast. That shit was 12 miles and it was absolutely grueling for sure, but I had so much fun doing it because it was like, oh, what's next? What's this obstacle? What's that? And there was a lot of running in between, and there was really, like, you felt like you were being pushed, but there was a, you know, an organization to it where they got it. This shit was just fucking a bunch of bullshit obstacles put on the side of a creek, and they just kept throwing you back in the motherfucking water. And I just had it with this fucking thing. By the time I was done, I was just like, yo, fuck this thing. It's just complete bullshit. And towards the end, they had one of those, Tough Mudder, they called it an Arctic enema. And it's like a dumpster that's got a liner in it, so it's not, like, dirty or anything. But, well, at least it's as not dirty as it's going to be in a mud race. But, So it's got
like a dumpster filled with ice water, like actual ice in the water and everything. And you jump into it, again, you're talking like waist, chest high, more chest high. And then there's a board that goes like up and down in the middle of it. So you wade forward to that. Then you got to go completely under the board, which, you know, submerges you in the ice water and come out the other side and then climb out of the thing. Tough Mudder, that was probably the hardest, most brutal part of the whole thing. Obviously, the distance, the hills, the, you know, all of those different things weighed in as far as how you felt the next day. Was Tough Mudder's big challenge was the beating that it puts on you, you know, and the endurance. But I had the mindset that there wasn't, nothing was going to stop me, and there was no maybes about finishing. So that stuff didn't hold me back so much on the day, except for that fucking ice dumpster, Arctic Enema thing. Jumped in there, and getting out was just like the biggest shock of my life. My whole body hurt. It felt like someone kicked me in the nuts and shit. Like the pain started from there, and it just fucking went out. And it just really like locked all your muscles up and shit. So I was like, fuck. And hearing that there was one of these at this race, I was like, oh, fuck, one of these goddamn things. By the time I got to that, that wasn't shit, because I was already frozen from being in the goddamn creek for the majority of the race. So it was fucking nothing. By the time I got to that, it was like, fuck, whatever. I could see the end of this shit. I don't know when the creek ends when they throw me in that shit. So it was just brutal. It wasn't fucking fun. Still doing, you know, another six of them this year. None of them are by the same company. So that's good, because, you know, I can't understand how they, and then even finishing it, like, they didn't even have medals for you and shit, which, you know, it's only a little piece of whatever, but you pay to sign up to this shit. The least they could do is fashion you some kind of little medallion or medal or something you could put on your wall afterwards. You know, I got a t-shirt, and that's pretty much it, man. But I was just fucked, man. I was just, after that, like, I brought a towel and, you know, a couple towels, and I had my hooded sweatshirt and shit, so I put that on and, like, wrapped the towels around me and just fucking shivered like a motherfucker, like, all the way home. It was brutal. So, anyway, one down, six to go, but the other ones are going to be a million times more fun than this. I do not recommend the ABF mud run in Pemberton, New Jersey, because they don't give a fuck about you. So, anyway, there's that. The next day, I went to, what the fuck town is it, Stockton? I think Stockton is the town, which is nowhere near where Stockton, the college, is. But I went out there because if you go to Chili Plants, which is spelled chileplants.com, it'll bring you to a place where you can order all sorts of different chili plants and stuff. I was looking for what I was going to order, you know, for my garden this year. And I was looking for, like, the craziest shit. And, like, where can I find, like, all sorts of crazy peppers? Last year I had the Thai chili peppers, which were really good and hot and, you know, pretty badass. But, and I tried doing the ghost peppers and stuff, but the ones I had just didn't take off. I think I might have planted them a little early and I got cold, which now I learned you can't do that. So anyway, looking up on the websites, because a lot of times I'll order my plants offline, I found this and found that it's located in Jersey. So I looked up and was like, oh, well, it's like an hour and a half away. It's like, you know what? Fuck ordering online. Let me actually go to this joint. This joint has over 500 types of peppers. Like, no bullshit. Over 500 types of peppers. They have tomatoes and eggplants too, but I don't give a shit about neither one of those things. So I don't like growing tomatoes because there's bugs you didn't know fucking existed that will come out of fucking somewhere else in the world and come to your yard just to eat the goddamn tomatoes. There's, like, I've seen, like, orange fucking worm-looking bugs with a horn on top of their head. Some shit comes out of Middle Earth into your fucking yard just to eat the goddamn tomatoes. I'll go buy tomatoes at the fucking store if I want tomatoes. I don't need that shit. They don't fuck with hot peppers like that. You know, even the bugs know what the fuck's up with these joints. So that's, and I hate eggplants, so I sure as shit ain't getting fucking eggplants. I think that entire plant should be outlawed from the United States. It's just half the time it just plays fake-ass meat. Like, they just put it in the eggplant parm. What the fuck is that? This shit isn't chicken. This shit doesn't belong. One of these things is not like the other. Like, why would you get the shit that's supposed to be half-ass meat? They bread it up like it's meat. Another fucking vegetable they treat like fucking eggplant. Bullshit-ass vegetable. So anyway, I go out there because I'm like, man, they got the shit over there. And they had the Carolina Reaper, which is right now the top of the Scoville scale, which is the scale they use to measure the hottest pepper in the world. Years ago, it was the ghost pepper. It's been surpassed since by the Morgua scorpion pepper and Trinidad scorpion peppers. And now all of it is surpassed by the Carolina Reaper is the current record holder. So I went out there, and I actually, not only did I get those, I got 26 different types of peppers. Now, actually left there with 28 plants, a few multiples of a few different things, and then got home that night and went back on the website, because when I got there, I should have got one of the little catalogs with the pictures and stuff and descriptions. So when I got home, looked at everything I got, and one of them or two of them, I grabbed like the wrong plant. I thought I was getting something else and whatever. So those aren't even hot peppers. So I went back on the website and I'm like, you know what? You can only order in sixes off the website. And I was like, fuck it. I'm going to order another six. Cause I'm just fucking obsessive like that. Anything I do in excess. So if I feel unsatisfied, I'm doing more of that shit. Know that. So, you know, it works good, you know, in the fitness area and, you know, some different things. It definitely works to my favor. But that's that obsessive mentality I have. So anyway, one, like I said, total six more plants of different things I have. I have 34 total plants, 28 total different types of peppers. Just crazy shit. So the shit's popping off in my yard this year. They said you couldn't plant them for another 3 weeks. So I got about another 2 weeks. Next week they're saying the temperatures are going to be pretty good at night. But I kind of worry that, you know, I get one night that it drops off a little bit. I'm safest. I'm going to wait another week beyond this one and, you know, plant them the following weekend. So, I'm looking forward to what my garden's going to look like this summer because it's crazy, man. I got so many different types of peppers and shit I never tried before. The majority of them never tried before, so it's going to be pretty interesting. I even got these peppers. If you look them up online, they're called Peter peppers, and they look like dicks. So more or less get them for the comedic value of handing people them at a barbecue and telling them to eat a dick. So that's... That's more or less why I did those ones. You know, it makes them want a burger with a pepper in it, a little dick sticking out of it. That'd be pretty hilarious. So, that's one thing I had to write down amongst my my things to talk about, and I because I forgot about it amongst the best of the best talk. Before best of the best, we were hungry as shit. We got there almost an hour early, and we're just like, we need somewhere to eat. We had passed this joint initially the last time we went to Voorhees, New Jersey. And I didn't know what the place was. I knew that the shit looked like a fucking GameStop. I mean, there's no other way to explain this joint than it looks exactly like a GameStop. The building looks that way. The letters on the building look that way. But the name of the joint is Smash Burger. This fucking shit is off the chain. If you go to CZW Live in Voorhees, find your motherfucking way to Smash Burger. They got some banging-ass burgers up in there. I personally don't recommend the fries. I mean, they had a good taste to them, but they're really thin. I like thicker fries and shit. So that's just my preference, but the fries actually did taste really good. They're, like, made with olive oil and some fucking spices or herbs and shit in there, so they're different. They got like a different taste to them and stuff, and they're good, but I like thicker fries, so that's kind of why I like, that's the only reason I don't fuck with those.
the next time I go there, I'm just going to get like a double, triple, fucking quadruple burger up in there, or maybe a couple singles. Either way, burgers off the fucking chain. Yeah, I mean, that you got to go out there and get one of them. I actually looked them up too, and there's one in Bricktown, so I got to go hit one up over here because that's closer to me than Voorhees, and that's doable as far as I can find something to do up that way and make sure I hit a smash burger while I'm at it, because very excited for that, because those fucking burgers are good. Not many joints you can go into that, you know, actually have banging-ass burgers, and this is one of them. They have chicken stuff there, too. The chicken sandwiches are banging. One of those things, man, if you do something good enough and you're not, like, right up the road where I could try a bunch of shit or I could keep hitting it up until I've had my fill of the burgers and then hit a chicken sandwich, there's very little chance I'm going to be able to eat one of their chicken sandwiches, because every time I end up there, I'm going to wind up eating a fucking burger. So that's, you know, that's that. Let me see. What else do I got? If you haven't seen the Ultimate Warrior documentary, definitely see it. I know they have the Warrior DVD. That's not the one I'm talking about. I think it's called like the Ultimate Legend or something like that. It's a 1-hour documentary they did on WWE, the WWE Network. I know you can find it on there, and probably torrent sites or wherever else. It might even be on YouTube at this point because, like I said, it's an hour. But very, very well done. You know, they talked to him a bunch of different times, filmed a bunch of stuff, including, you know, stuff leading up to that WrestleMania weekend. They showed him and Hulk kind of like patching things up backstage, and him and Vince patching things up, and just a lot of different things that were filmed that obviously they were going to use for a different project. But then, you know, with his passing, you know, they put all into this, but just a lot of insight, a lot of, you know, talking about the different times and things. And, you know, even over the years of his career, it really brought you through a lot. And I just thought it was just done really, really well. So I recommend that everybody going out there and checking that out. I am doing this show on my new computer for the first time, too. This computer was put together by none other than Ruckus. And I love the thing. I have a ton to get used to because I'm computer retarded for the most part. And but it's a ton faster. It's a ton better. Like I said, hopefully in the future I could also help use this to get myself off of Blog Talk, save myself a whole shitload of money. But time will tell as far as that, because I'm computer illiterate, so it's not easy for me to just quick figure out and configure something in order for me to do something that's going to benefit me. I kind of need someone to help walk me through it. Yeah, I got a couple people hopefully I could contact for that and, you know, see what I could do. But like I said, that's a work in progress. But yeah, this joint is off the fucking hook. A lot of cool stuff. One thing of which is a program on there that Ruckus put on there. It's crazy. It's like a hooked up version of the Xbox Media Center. And I wired this shit to my TV, man. I could get any TV show, any movie, anything, fucking yawn, anything on there, just anything, man. It's all there. It's fucking, it's great, man. I watched Anchorman 2 on the shit the other night, last week. I thought that shit was hilarious. I loved the first Anchorman, as I think pretty much anybody who watched it did. But Anchorman 2 got a lot of backlash, and people said that it wasn't good, or it was shit, it wasn't this, that. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was really good. I'm going to watch it more than once. And, same style of comedy. The jokes were on point, and the cameos were fucking crazy. They hit a certain point, and they just started firing off cameos. It was crazy as hell. But, I thought that movie was funny as shit. What else did I watch? I watched Grudge Match, which wasn't real fan of. It had its moments, but then it kind of started to drag, and kind of hacky as far as the what they were going with there, but you know, it is what it is. And I don't think it was meant to be any kind of masterpiece, but I watched some TNA. I can't get into much of it. Like a Bully Ray, I don't give a shit about that dude. I'm never going to give a shit about that. He's just one of those dudes that I hope just never wrestles again, but unfortunately, that's not in the plans. They have some guy, Samuel Shaw, who has pretty much like a rapist gimmick. The dude just... He's got, like, the black leather gloves on and, like, long-sleeve fucking shirt, like, black shirt, like, pretty much all black, but then with, like, khakis on and shit, and he just looks like a fucking rapist, and that's, like, kind of his character portrayal. So that's, pretty interesting. I don't watch TNA enough to actually see these people, so I don't know. But I continue to say that I do like the Willow character quite a bit. A lot of the criticism I'm hearing about it is like that it wouldn't sell, or when Jeff Hardy's so over, then why would you put a mask on him? I mean, first off, I mean, Jeff Hardy's character was garbage. He started just like randomly pasting blacklight paint on himself and then coming out and doing his little spastic dance. And he was over with that bullshit. There was no real actual effort put into that gimmick whatsoever, and it was just like, oh, here's Jeff Hardy with some random paint on it. I guess he had a couple points where he had some direction to his paint, but most of it was just smeared on. It's not like he had paint that, you know, like what fucking Devitt's doing. It's ridiculous what Devitt's doing. His shit is phenomenal. He continues to pop me with his fucking, with his paint jobs and shit, because the fucking shit's crazy looking. So, you know, he's using different characters from, you know, comic books and movies and shit, but it's so original because no one's done that. No one's just gone out there and done that and hit it so accurately where he just looks amazing coming out there. You know, and even like the paint that, Joker CZW would do. Like his own paint and like the, what he did with Rory. And I mean, there's creative paint where it's going to look cool. It's going to make you look, you know, larger than life, or, you know, like a more in-depth character than you were. The stuff Hardy was doing was fucking ridiculous. There was nothing good. And he has enough money to be putting some legit fucking thought and work into it, but it never was. So when it comes down to this Willow gimmick that, you know, yeah, he's got like the penguin umbrella type situation, and he could sell umbrellas, which they're already selling on the fucking website. He could sell the fucking mask. Everybody knows it's Jeff Hardy. It's not like they just bury that gimmick. He did the Will o' the Wisp thing before he did the Jeff Hardy thing, even though it completely bombed in Ring of Honor. I was at that show and just couldn't understand it one bit. I think it was him and Joey Mercury or Joey Matthews, whatever you want to call him, and Crazy K, or I think that's Kirby Mac. I believe that was the three of them it was, but he came out and just got buried from fucking bell to bell, even previous to the bell, just coming out, and he had the Willow thing, and dude was trying to make it special for the indies. He came out in the gimmick he was in before the WWE. So to me, I think he was trying to connect with the indie fans by being more indie again and steering back in that direction. And they just fucking shit on him. I haven't heard somebody booed out of the building the way that he was in a long time. And I was like in awe, because I was happy to, you know, be seeing him live and stuff like that. I had met him at like a signing type thing, and I was happy to do that then. He was still in the WWE. But to see him on the indies in front of me and stuff like that, I was very happy to see him on the card. And it was fucking amazing how hard he got shit on for a character that's always been super over. But that was, you know, I had seen the Willow thing there. I don't know. I just think it works. He could be way out there. Jeff Hardy's always had a super weird character. I think anyone who's ever been into the Jeff Hardy character as a whole will be just as into the Willow character. At least I think so. You know, he's always had that weird alternative freak, you know, what was it, a character wrapped in Enigma or whatever the fuck, or an Enigma. I don't, what the fuck did he call himself? I don't know. But anyway, you know, he always had that crazy fucking gimmick, and I think the Willow shit is very, very good. It's very marketable, and it's something different. You know, like I said, it's not for everybody because it's a whole, you know, like that whole freak show style. That's kind of the direction he always took anyway. It's just a different spin on it. But, I like it. I think it's good. Man, there was one match that I thought was good. It was La Tigra versus, I don't really know neither one of these dudes, but they put on an entertaining match to me. I really don't have even that much to cover there. The Wyatts have just been killing it, doing the kids thing, the whole world, coming out, chanting the shit, fucking super creepy, cool stuff. Ric Flair coming out, fucking absolutely wasted, not this past week, the week before, you know, doing the thing with Evolution. I mean, that guy needs to be not given any more paychecks. He's Ric Flair and everything like that. I understand that. And I always liked Flair. But at this point, he's just shitting on his legacy, and they're paying him to do it. And it just shouldn't happen anymore. If he's going to kind of, you know, go down a hugely negative path, they need to stop paying him amongst it. They really do, because it's ridiculous. He sounded like such a fucking loser in the ring, just, you know, babbling on and on. And he's supposed to do, like, a big kind of turn on Evolution by saying S.H.I.E.L.D. is the future, and he just did it in such a sloppy, horrible embarrassment of a way. I mean, they're just not, they can't keep employing this fucking guy. They just can't. I mean, keep him under whatever kind of Legends contract and pump out DVDs and make money, whatever you want to do. You want to, I mean, I guess send him out for some kind of signings or something, but even at that, if he's going to be fucking shit-faced, I don't know. They got to, you know, I mean, if the dude ain't going to get help, he ain't going to get help. I mean, you can't force the guy into help, but for sure that dude is off, way off his fucking rocker. And, on the way to the Pepper thing, they had some shit because going there, go down 5:30, whatever, and you got to go through a bunch of shit like mountains and, you know, woodsy towns and all that. You go through Trenton, but then you go pop through this other town, and they had some shit that there were, like, parking everywhere and signs, motherfuckers holding signs. It's called Shadfest. And I don't know what the fuck is Shadfest. The only thing I could think of is it might have been that dude from Crime Time is now being highly celebrated in this little mountain town not far from Trenton. That's the only thing I could think of, because I don't know what the fuck else a Shad Fest would be. So it could be Shad Gaspard getting all the respect in the world in a little mountain town. And, I mean, they had parking, people paying for parking and walking up the streets and stuff. Couldn't see any of what the actual festival or whatever was, but Shad Fest indeed. They were putting it on out there. As far as the pay-per-view, the S.H.I.E.L.D. and Evolution was a really good match. They did a lot there, you know, the spots off of the balcony and whatnot, and they did a lot with that match. That was actually a lot more impressive than I expected. Cena Wyatt was really good. I just love what the Wyatts are doing. Then they did the voice changer thing with the whole world, you know. That was cool, you know. The Wyatts are doing absolute great shit. Bray Wyatt, his character is just absolutely on fire. It's something different. They continue to invest in it, and I think that's the most important thing, because so often they just throw together a character. They give you enough to know his identity and maybe pump out a T-shirt behind it, and then they just coast on that. They stop developing character as soon as you know what the character is. I just feel like the most of the character development is only to get you know who, you know, to identify with them and know who that is, and then it stops dead, and then they're just another guy coming to the ring. And they show little signs of the character, but nothing more innovative. It's usually just innovation going up to the point of knowing the character. This you know the character, you know the Wyatts, and they seem to continuously innovate and just invest in it. They seem to just keep investing in this gimmick, and I hope they don't stop with it, because to me, this is the type of thing that makes me want to tune in. It really is. Kane Daniel Bryan was good. It seemed like through a lot of the match, the Daniel Bryan was carrying this dude. And it was funny, which is, you know, Kane's an absolute vet, so, and legend. I can't see why it would have to go that direction, but he hit the one move he was supposed to, more or less, you know, the Kane leaning up against the ropes, Daniel Bryan's going for the clothesline. They're supposed to both go over. You can see where he went for it. He pretty much leaped and grabbed him both hands on the chest and, like, pulled him over the ropes with him. Like, it just seemed like it was kind of forced. The finish really surprised me with the flaming table spot. I popped huge for that because, fuck, man, flaming tables in the WWE, and he actually took it, and the flames were crazy as shit. People, you know, trying to criticize, oh, they had the fire extinguishers ready. Listen, you know, they're not trying to actually get burnt. It kind of takes me back to what I was talking about with Joe Gacy, and I'm going to continue to bring that up with different wrestlers and see what their opinions on it is, because I think it's a horrible, horrible thing that deathmatch wrestling and hardcore and a lot of those things has fallen into. It's like, oh, you pussy, you didn't get burned. Like, no one wants to get really burned. Like, when it comes right down to it, wrestling is supposed to be a show. And even though, you know, you have your danger to wrestling, it's supposed to give off the aura of severe injuries more so than actually inflict severe injuries. So a guy getting thrown through a flaming table and people scrambling over with the fire extinguishers to put him out, well, that's kind of something that you would consider more normal. You know, shit on it or anything like that, but when Nick Gage has to run around the ring fucking two times before anyone does anything for him, and he's fucking skin's bubbling, and the guy who never takes his shirt off's got his shirt off, and he's fucking... that's probably not the most professional way to go about things, and I don't think anyone's signing up to have that happen on a regular basis. Especially a guy like Kane is taking a flaming table spot at, I don't know what age he is. He's got to be not far away from retirement, and the guy's taking a flaming table spot. So enough with the criticism. I think it's fucking phenomenal, and I think that's the part where things need to be done. If you're in a heated battle, no pun intended, if you're doing some kind of feud and you want to really emphasize how fucking serious it's getting by doing something of that caliber, it makes sense. And I know they're trying to sell it and sell it and sell it. Following that on Raw, I think about the only thing I actually have to say about Raw, because I haven't even gotten through the whole thing, but... this Kane being a super scary fucking movie, fucking horror monster guy, I'm not buying it. I think it's goofy as shit. I think it's dumb. You know, him and Daniel Bryan were going through fucking couples counseling a year ago, and now he's like, oh my God, it's fucking Kane. I'm so scared of that guy. He's so terrible. Where is he? I got to get out of here. He might be here. I mean, let's not, number one, forget that less than 24 hours before that Raw, he threw Kane through a fucking flaming table and won the match. So why is he absolutely terrified of the guy that he fucking put down the night before? And even cut like that after promo shit where they do like a pay-per-view wrap-up and they interview the guys, like a post-game report. And he's like, I don't think I'm done fucking that dude up because he, you know, he's fucking with my chick and I don't do that shit. So he might not be done with me, but I tell you what, I'm not done with him either. And then the next night they're running like fucking Jason Voorhees in the building and shit. And it's just like, it's goofy as hell. It's like, oh, that guy I wrestled last night that I used to be a tag partner with, that, you know, we work in the same company, and, oh, my God, he's super scary. Get me out of here. Bring my car up. I got to get out. Just, it seems silly as shit. Kane went through too much of the goofy stuff to be the super scary monster again. I don't buy it. The kid with the little voice changer doing the whole world, that has a scarier fucking aura to America than Kane at this point. They could put Kane in Sino, whatever the fuck, 8, and I think the fucking kid with the voice changer, you know, doing a demonic voice towards John Cena is, you know, has more of a horror aura to him at this point than Kane does. So, it's just my opinion, but is what it is. I think that's all I got there. I was also saying during the thing I was watching, I'm like, Kane, man, if he goes as long as The Undertaker, they're going to start calling him Stroke Kane. And because I always worry about that. The WWE doesn't like to let go of their guys, especially their bigger guys, because that's generally what they tend to lean towards. And, sorry, I'm trying to type and talk, and it's very difficult for me. There we go. Now I'm bringing up CZW site. I wanted to go into real quick the show that's going on Saturday live on iPay-Per-View, and, let me see what they got going on for Proving Grounds, it's called. It's the top of the card has got Dysfunction with his, they have it listed as Dysfunction's last death match, which a lot of people are back and forth on the internet about, but it's his last CZW death match. He's doing kind of a death match farewell tour, so to speak. He's doing, I think, King of the Death Match, provided that happens, hopefully it does, later in the summer, and he's doing a couple different death matches in a couple different places, but this is the last CCW death match, and yeah, it'll be good. Danny Havoc versus Dysfunction and a big, you know, blow-off death match thing, it's going to be fucking crazy. Four-way for the CCW World Heavyweight Championship, Drew Gulak defends against Chris Dickinson, Biff Busick, and Masada in a four-way. I personally think that they should flip the title on this. I think they should give it to either Dickinson or Busick, preferably Dickinson. I would just like to see something different as far as, you know, the main event picture or whatever. It's just me. I mean, Drew's doing a great job. He's done a phenomenal job being, you know, champion, and his defenses have been really good. Defenses. But I don't know. I'd like to see a little mix of things. Dickinson's one of those dudes. Even AR Fox, they avoided it for a while. I wouldn't be opposed to him being up top. And then just to see them bring in a multitude of different people. Same thing, you know, with Dickinson, bring in a bunch of different people for him to work like they did with Masada, and they brought in El Generico, they brought in Richards, they brought in, you know, a bunch of different people like that. So I'd like to see them actually, you know, do the same thing with Dickinson and just bring in a bunch of different crazy matchups and give you like a variety of different things, because I think he's going to bring that energy on the top of the card that CZW really needs. Like I said, Drew's doing great. It's just, you know, what I kind of hope happens to keep him moving. It's almost like everybody that's held the title, they keep on it for a really long time. And I don't necessarily think it needs to be that way. So I'd hate to see everybody go through a year, 2 year title run, because it does grow stale. And, yeah, a four-way is kind of good, too, because it doesn't take away the strength of a champion. They lose it in a four-way. It could be all sorts of different things that go on. You end up, you know, still getting your rematch later on, or, you know, he's having the claim that I wasn't beat one-on-one. There's a bunch of things you could do with that. But I think that match is going to be crazy, too. There's a lot of possibilities for that match. Juicy Product defending their titles, their newly won titles against the Beaver Boys. I think that'll be good in a rematch. Azrael up against the returning Joker. Should be good. It'd be good to see Joker back in CZW. Black Keys versus Sozio and DJ's Revenge, where DJ hires the front, da-da-da-da-da. Personally, I think this is dumb. I think the thing is, you have the front built as this mafia-type tag, this mafia-type team. If Sozio is to be the leader, he, unfortunately, should be the guy who does a lot of the talking, but not as much of the wrestling. He should not have to, you know, by storyline, get his hands dirty carrying out things like this. And especially if the front is to be hired, you know, they brought in Jaka. They should be having Jaka go take care of things like this. They should have Biff Busick go, you know, take out people and stuff like that. But not like, hey, I'm going to hire this mafia to go take out that guy. So clearly the mob boss is going to go fucking fight. I mean, what kind of fucking sense does that make? It's just, to me, it's kind of a silly premise. I don't think that they have their shit right as far as what the front's doing and the way that they're portrayed, because they just keep throwing, you know, the leader of the group, the quote-unquote mob boss, into fucking goofy tag team matches, and, you know, they should build him up as a far more powerful, you know, obviously they have to get past, you know, whatever they've done with them in the past, but they should build him up as a lot more powerful of a guy who doesn't get into the ring as much because he doesn't have to. He has his henchmen and he has people to carry it out for him. So when it's like, hey, I need you guys' help to take someone out, the fucking boss shouldn't jump up and be like, all right, I'll go get him. Like, that's more of a henchman type action. So just by storyline, by the way that they built this group and what the group's actually supposed to mean, it just comes off kind of silly to me. Kimberly and a mystery partner versus Nevaeh and a mystery partner. So, see what goes on there. Greg Excellent versus Joey Ryan in a rematch of their last match. That was entertaining last time, so Jesus Christ, I gotta stop doing this. And then Shelly Martinez makes her CZW debut as well, so you can check that out. CZWI pay-per-view, I believe. Let me see. CZWIPPV.com. You can check that out. Now, before that, too, they're doing the King and Queen of the Ring thing. So, see how that goes. Quick rundown of that. They had, I guess, stripped and fired Jessica Havoc, which I don't know if it's a work or not because I pay zero attention to that company, but it seems strange because they fired her and stripped her and then just, I don't know. Almost seems like it's not a work, but again, I have no knowledge of what goes on in that company, so it could be whatever. But 2 out of 3 falls. Winner will be the new champion is LaFisto versus Athena. I don't even know who Athena is. That's why I'm only doing this quick because I have no knowledge of the majority of these chicks. Barbie Hayden versus Nevaeh, Shanna and Chris Dickinson versus Sassy Stephanie and DJ Hyde in one of the first round matchups. Shelly Martinez and JT Dunn versus Candice LeRae and Joey Ryan. Mickey Knuckles and the Bulldozer Matt Tremont versus Jules Malone and Danny Havoc. And Kimberly and Drew Gulak get a first-round bye into the second round. And then you have Jenny Rose and Hania and Angie Sky versus Angelus Lane. I don't know who any of those people are. So you got that. Check out my dudes over there at the Sports Den tonight going into everything. Sure, they're talking about how badass my Miami Heat are, how they're taking the fucking NBA by storm again. Fucking swept the first round. Their game 7 will be game 3 of their second series played, while half of the league left has played game 7s in the first round. The Nets, you know, they had all sorts of stuff to talk about.
beating us during the regular season, four games of the regular season, blah, 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 blah. We jobbed them out. Straight up. Came into Miami, smacked the shit out of them last night, and that is what it is there. You can't fuck with the Heat. They're built for the playoffs, man. All the haters, it's the worst time of year for these motherfuckers because it ain't shit stopping the Heat. Ain't shit stopping them whatsoever. The Pacers were supposed to be badass. Watch out for the fucking Pacers. They almost ate shit fucking first round to the Hawks, and now they're pretty much about to lose to the Wizards. They lost first game. They went to game 7 with the Hawks, and they got problems here. They got big, big problems here. The Pacers better worry about getting out of this round, let alone dealing with the Heat. And, you know, problems on the other side, too. I mean, you got Oklahoma City Thunder. They're talking big stuff there. They almost lost to the Grizzlies. And, you know, one of the Grizzlies stars was suspended for Game 7. So, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that kind of helped give them that. And now they got to worry about Chris Paul and them. So, you know, nobody's a sure bet, even the Miami Heat. But I'll tell you what, if we ain't looking like the odds-on favorite to be fucking repeating this shit, then I don't know what to tell you. So my boys over there at the Sports Center will be talking a lot about that. We got the upcoming draft as well. I believe that's tomorrow night, isn't it? Something like that. Coming right up, the NFL draft. And, you know, they got baseball to talk about, hockey, I think, does their playoffs now, too, and a bunch of other things. So always check out the Sports Den over there. Check out Stern Nation this weekend. I believe they do it on Saturday. They'll be talking everything Howard Stern and all that's going on over there. Dudes over there at the Wrestling Suit, Mish, Joey, they do their thing tomorrow night. I believe 7 o'clock. They did a wrap-up on the pay-per-view. I haven't gotten a chance to listen to it yet, but, yeah, you can go back, check out their archives. They got all sorts of stuff from the past, and like I said, they'll be doing their show tomorrow night. So check them out as well. I think that's about all I got. Oh, also, I switched over to Retro Fitness from what I was doing over there at Planet Fitness. Gas money wise, it was better and a little bit more money, but in the same token, much, much better gym. I went there for the first time last night. I actually went there for the first time Monday night. Turns out that the fucking lock I had was too tall. I had too much shit in my bag. I had my iPad in my bag and whatnot, and I couldn't leave my shit unlocked. I went to put the lock on the locker. The shit was too tall. I sit there fucking with it for 10 minutes, couldn't get the lock on there, end up just having to bounce and fucking start off my shit yesterday. And I went in there yesterday, killed it, did my thing, man, and, you know, got some getting used to this gym, but it's a step in the right direction. I'm definitely going to be stepping my game even further up than I was. I was already pushing myself with the Planet Fitness and all that, and now it's going to go, you know, 100% full fucking force ahead with this Retro Fitness thing. So I'm happy to be there, and it's only the beginning, man. So I'll definitely talk to you more next week about that, and you know, a bunch more stuff to cover, you know, amongst that. Skip tonight because I actually went and played a game of kickball with people from work, which was kind of random. Came up the other day, they were like, anyone want to play kickball? So I was like, fuck it, I'll sign up for that. Then I came home, moved a half a quart of wood with a fucking wheelbarrow with a flat tire, and then kind of just ran in and did the show. So it's kind of busy tonight, but it's back at the gym tomorrow and Friday and everything else, and just full force ahead. So that's what it is, man. Check me out next week. I think I hit everything I wanted to hit. Sorry if I'm a little out of sorts all over the place tonight, but it is what it is. Hope you enjoyed the show. Check you motherfuckers out next week. Peace.
There's a cat in the house. Cat in the house. Let's get to the cat in the house.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Kill them all. Back on top. Think about it. Fuck Hulk Hogan.
Because these motherfuckers are geniuses.
Keep it up, my nigga.
What the fuck?
but you go to the back and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town, and it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.